Okay, now we're going to hear from Mike and Jane, who are going to share their experience on steps 8 and 9 with us.
All right. I'm Mike, an alcoholic.
Hi, Mike.
Finished my fifth, my sixth, seventh step, and then my sponsor told me, you know, after I took my seventh step and I agreed to move forward with the rest of the program, that the next thing we were going to do was make a list. So I know it says in the book, in the fourth step, or it says when it gets to the step 8 and 9 reading, that we already have a list. We made it when we took inventory. But I found it, what was suggested to me and what I did was to make a separate list. And I found that helpful, and so I suggested to the guys I work with, you know. So I was told to go back through my inventory and especially looking at my answers to self-seeking, where I try to impose my will on other people in different ways, and start making a list of people who I had harmed. And the thing was that they knew I harmed them, either by action, through word, through action, or inaction, like not being there for someone who needed me, you know, or who I had a responsibility to care for or whatever. So, you know, that's what I started to do. I don't remember what my original list was, but we eventually, after I had my list, yeah, it was also to put down financial, you know, people or institutions that I owed money to. And I put deceased people down as well. And then we got together, and I can't remember if we went over what I had. Usually what I do is I get together with a guy I'm helping, and we go over his list, and we find out, we take one at a time, and what do we need to make an amend for, and then we decide, is this appropriate, or is this going to injure this person or other people involved? And we kind of pare the list down. You know, if yes, then we cross them off the list. If no, then we leave them on the list, you know. So I ended up with 30 people on my list that I had done harm to. They knew I had done harm to them. They had been on the receiving end of the harm I had done to them in various different ways. And it was time to start to go out there, you know. So it's one thing to write about fear and what's the social trust and rely on God, you know, and all this. It's pretty easy to write that stuff, but now it's time to put that stuff, take the show on the road, so to speak, you know, and put that stuff into practice, you know. So then my sponsor suggested, you know, you might want to break your list out into kind of categories like business acquaintances and friends, like the book mentions, financial amends, relationship-related amends, family amends, and maybe deceased or something like that. So that's what I did. Just for me, it made it easier. So I could track my progress going forward. As I would make an amend, I'd cross it off, and then I could look back, see who else do I need to make an amend to, and I could track my progress. Every time I made an amend, I would cross that person's name or the institution off the list. So I had a private top secret list, too, that I did not tell my sponsor about, and I called it my will not make an amends list. Will never make an amends list. And I said, as long as I don't tell him, because he told me, he says, I'm not going to be, now it's time to start taking responsibility for yourself and develop a relationship of integrity with yourself and a relationship with God. And, you know, start to learn how to put the big boy pants on and take ownership of this. He said, I'll be available to help you if you have any questions, you have something coming up that maybe I have experience with, a similar amend, or if I don't have experience with that type of an amend, I might know someone who does that I could direct you to get some help. But he says, this is really between you and God. So when he told me that, and he talked about, you know, this integrity, having a, you know, personal relationship integrity. So that's when I said, well, he's not going to be checking up on this stuff. So that's when I decided to create my other category of I will not make amends list, you know. And I had, I forget, four people, I think, on there that I would absolutely, I am never, ever, ever going to apologize to these friggin' people, ever, you know. And it's just my little secret, you know. So, and nobody will ever know except me, you know. So I thought, you know, and so out I went on my amends. So I'll give you two experiences, and they were both people on my never, I will never make amends list. So the first one was a friend of mine, Jackie, who I grew up with, and we were very close friends. I didn't think he was an alcoholic growing up, but I would try to take him hostage when we'd go out. So he was married. He got married young, and I was single, and we'd go out, and we played sports together. We played on a couple of softball teams together. I was first base. He was second base. So we interacted with each other a lot on the field, you know, and we knew each other, what each other was going to do, you know, and all that good stuff. And we used to play racquetball when that was popular back in the 70s, I think it was. So we were pretty good friends, you know, and I was always trying to get him to, you know, have a few drinks after, have another. He's like, no, I got to go home, and so on and so forth. So anyway, his wife started flirting with me, and I decided to engage, you know, and I had a one afternoon affair with his wife while Jackie was at work. This was not a guy you wanted to cross, you know, and so this is where alcohol would take me. When I was under the influence of alcohol, I would do things that I would never have done had I not been drinking alcohol. You know, I even had a mutual friend who knew, you know, people found out I used to drive a fire engine red 1974 Dodge Charger, and I parked it right in front of Jackie's house during the daytime when he was at work, you know. And they were on a main street with a lot of traffic going by, and it just stuck out like a sore thumb, and everybody knew who that car belonged to, you know. So word got out, you know, around the neighborhood, and so this mutual friend said, are you friggin' crazy? Do you know who you're messing with? And it did scare me enough that I just, it was that one time thing, and that was it. You know, I didn't do anything again, you know, but I feared repercussions from him because he had a reputation in the neighborhood as somebody that you did not cross. He was not somebody to screw with, you know. And so I moved out of the neighborhood. That's how I handle it, you know. And that's my solution. And so years went by. I don't know how many years went by the time I got into AA and did this work. It was probably 15 years when I was at this point. So Jackie's on my will not do amends, my private only I know will not do a men's list, you know. And I'm at a funeral for an old neighbor of mine back in Dorchester. I'm going to the funeral. I'm standing outside the church before the service, just kind of hanging around outside, and I see this guy. I see him coming, and he saw me. He's looking right in my eyes. And the first thought that came to my mind was, run. You know, it was not asking for help, believe me. Run, you know. And the only place I could run, I saw it out of the corner of my eye, was down this stairway on the side of the church. But he was approaching me, and he's looking at me, and I knew if I do that, I'm going to look bad. And being a good alcoholic, I would rather die than look bad, you know? So I froze. I don't know, maybe it was the grace of God. I don't know. I just froze. And then I said, God, I can't do this. You got to, that's exactly what I said to myself. You got to do this. I can't do this. Because I knew what I was going to have to do. Because he's coming right at me. I absolutely did not expect this. I was not expecting to see him. And he walked up to me and he says, how you doing? And I was shaking in my boots, you know. And I said, I'm doing okay. I said, you know, good to see you. Ha, ha, ha. You know, and and I said, listen, you got a couple of minutes? And he says, yeah. And I said, listen, I got in AA. So he knew about AA. He had a brother-in-law who was in AA and had been in AA for a while. So he knew about AA. So I felt it appropriate. I just said, so I'm in AA. I went through this 12-step program, and it requires me to, you know, look at my past and where I did harm to, you know, to acknowledge my wrong to people I harmed. And I said, in your case, it was my behavior with you know, Beverly. And I said, it was just so selfish. And so I violated our friendship. And, I don't know what kind of trouble it caused for you and her at home and your little girl at the time, their little daughter. And it was so inconsiderate. And I so regret that. And he's just looking at me, and he said, well, we're divorced. And I felt a little bit of relief. And he said, so she moved to Florida with Shelly, and I haven't spoken to her in a few years. So I don't know how many years it was. And I said, oh, that's too bad. I feel bad. And he says, no, don't worry about it. She's a bitch, you know. And I thought to myself, yes. I'm saying, oh, gee, that's too bad. But inside of myself, I'm saying, oh, my God, I think I'm going to live. And he's just looking at me. It was the weirdest thing. He's staring at me. So he hadn't seen me since I was drinking. So it had been, like I said, about 15 years since I'd seen this guy, since he had seen me. And he said, what the hell has happened to you? Oh. And, I said, Jackie, I'm sober. I said, I got sober. I don't even want to drink. I said, this thing was unbelievable. I said, AA has completely changed me. And I lost my desire to drink, and it's changed my whole life. And he was like, Jesus, I can see it. And he said, you know what? I got a drinking problem. I was like, holy shit. And I said, Jackie, listen, here's my number. You know, if you ever want to talk, if you ever have any questions, need any help or anything, just call me anytime. And we ended up actually going in together to this church service and sitting together through the service and leaving. And then we said goodbye. And he said, geez, oh, man, he said, good to see you. And I said, well, good to see you, too, you know. And it was unbelievable. And I didn't hear from him. He never called me. And I didn't call him. I just left it as it was. So about, I don't know, five, 6 years later, I'm with. So I made this amend before I had met Jane. So now in this, however long it was after that, a few years, a couple of years, I met Jane. So Jane and I go to this AA meeting, a big open speaker meeting in Dorchester, where I grew up. There he is. I saw him. Holy crap. And the unbelievable thing that I experienced was, it was as if nothing ever happened. I felt like I wasn't afraid. I didn't feel like running or dodging. I felt the actually more love for this guy than I had felt when we were friends, good friends, growing up. It was unbelievable. And I said, holy crap, Jackie. And I introduced them to Jane, and I said, what are you doing here? And he says, I'm 5 years sober. And I don't know if that amend had anything to do with it. I like to think, I hope it planted a seed maybe in him. But, you know, it was as if nothing had ever happened. It was incredible. And I have not seen him again since then, you know, and I pray that he's okay. I think of him every now and then, you know, but it was a powerful experience. So that was one of the persons on my I will never do list that was done. And another one was this boss that I had, a former boss, but I was still working at the same company where he worked. I just transferred into a different department under a different boss. So this guy was one of those, you know, they talk about in the amends of the book, we take the bit in our teeth with an enemy. Mm-hmm. So this was someone, there weren't many in my case, but this was one of them who hurt me more than I hurt him. And he just had a skill for finding my buttons and pushing my buttons and making fun of me in front of my coworkers. And it you know what that's like for an alcoholic, you know. And I hated this guy with a passion. I mean, blood red hate, you know. And I got a little bit of a better attitude doing the writing on him and reading it off of my FIP stuff, but I was like, I'm never making amends to this guy, you know. And all of a sudden he starts showing up more than usual, you know, in my travels around the building or out in the parking lot, and I just kept dodging this guy. I'm like, I am not making an amend to this guy. No matter what, I'm not making an amend to this guy, you know. And so one morning, I knew I had to, so I was working in this lab with another guy. And I had to make copies of a document. And in order to make these copies, I had to walk by this guy's office. And so I said, I am going to come in early, like at 5 a.m. I know he comes in at 9. I'm coming in at 5, and then I'll go down, and I will make the copies, and I'll come back, and I won't see him. I'm continuing to balk on this and avoid this guy. So I'm walking down. It's 5 a.m., and his office door is open. And I said, wow, that's odd. And I thought, oh, maybe it's the janitor just cleaning in early in the morning. Sometimes they'd be around cleaning offices. And I just walked by, looked in the side of my eye, and he wasn't in there. And I'm approaching this copy room, and I can hear the copy machine going. And I just got so scared. And I just said, God, you got to help me. Oh, Jesus. I said, I knew what was coming. I said, you got to do this. I can't do this, you know. And I don't want to do this, you know. And I hate this guy, you know. And I walked in. Sure enough, there he is. He looked at me. He smiled. And he says, "How are you doing?" I said, "Yeah, I'm doing okay. You got a minute, you know?" And he said, "Yeah, I did owe this guy amends because my kind of twisted way of getting back at him, because I was working for him, well, I would do a subpar job. I was missing days of work, especially when I was drinking. He had me while I was drinking. I hadn't got sober yet, and I was missing days of work. So this was all affecting him as the manager, you know? I wasn't producing like I was being paid to produce. And that was my side of the street that I needed to clean up, you know? And it had nothing to do with all the stuff he had done. That's what I was taught. We do not discuss what the other person has done. We keep the focus on ourselves, you know? And I told him the same thing. He knew I had gone to AA. And I said, so I went through, you know, the steps, and I had taken inventory and where I, you know, did wrong. I need to come back and acknowledge that to people I did harm. And I said, in your case, I wasn't the employee that I'd been hired to be. You know, I missed work. I did a half-assed job when I was here, and that affected you. You know, your performance report was based on how well we did, and you know, my coworkers were all doing well, and I was like the black sheep, you know. And I said, I want you to know I regret that, and I'm gonna try going forward to not to do that, you know, even though I was no longer working for him directly. But and he just said, gee, that's great, you know, that's great, you know, and I'm happy for you. And that was it, and I left. But here's what I experienced. The next day, I saw him, and I had no fear. And I thought, fear of people will leave us. And I said, holy crap. This guy, I was scared to death of this guy. I would see him and I would run. I would immediately duck, dodge, hide, you know. And I was just calm. And I'd say, "How you doing, Bill?" "Okay." And he looked a little nervous. He looked a little uncomfortable, you know. And actually, to be honest, I kind of liked it. And I began to notice in subsequent days after that that he was starting to go the other way when I was coming his way. And I said, "I like this." And honest to God, I started getting a little cocky, you know, and I started purposely going to where he was to see him run from me. And I'm thinking, this is beautiful. I'm going to enjoy this, you know, for however long it lasts. But the miracle happened. You know, one day I had seen him and enjoyed him being nervous around me again. And then I was like by myself in this lab, and the thought came to me, he doesn't have what you have. I think he was one of us. I really do. And because I drank with him and other co-workers, we all go out after sometimes. Anyway, that's really neither here nor there. But the thought came to me is, you are fortunate. You were lucky enough to get a program, and you learned how to take an honest inventory, and you learned how to see the true faults, your true faults, and you've learned how to correct them. He doesn't know how to do that. He doesn't know why he's uncomfortable around you. He doesn't know how to take care of his side of the street. He may not even be 100% sure what his side of the street is, just like you. And all of a sudden, I felt a deep sympathy for this guy. And I said, if this guy asked me to help him, I will go to any lengths. And I meant it. I will go to any lengths to help this man. And to this day, I feel that way. If he walked in here right now and needed help, I'd be the first to try to help this guy. And I thought, what is happening to me? Really? I was like, something is happening and I don't understand what this is. You know what this is? My sponsor could never have brought that about in me. Alcoholics Anonymous could not have brought that about in me. 8 million meetings could not have brought that about in me. I suddenly realized God had done something for me that no human power could have. I don't understand it. I don't need to understand it. I'm just so grateful for it. And I am a free man, and I know what freedom is. I know what freedom is. It's an inside job. It's an inside experience. And I was tortured by this friggin' disease for half of a lifetime. And I am not today, through the grace of God, through Alcoholics Anonymous. And those promises are no longer words on a page in a book or on a banner on a wall, which I, there were times I thought, what a bunch of shit those things, that's impossible. That's impossible. Thankfully, wrong again, Mike. So my will not ever make amends list became, oh yes, you will make amends list. Somebody, my sponsor didn't know about it, but obviously somebody knew about it, and those amends all were done, not through any effort on my part. You know, I found myself in situations where I could not escape, and I had to do it, and I'm grateful to the God I found through these steps for the freedom I got as a result of that. I do not deserve this. God gives it to me anyway for some reason, so... That's my experience with 8 and 9.
I'm Jane, alcoholic. Still an alcoholic, a real one. And I've been through the steps with the help of a Big Book Step Study sponsor and the love and grace of God, and working a lot of steps to the best of my ability. Just makes me feel good to say that. So good to be here and hear you. I knew what my wrongs were by writing it and sharing it in the fifth step. And I was told to immediately write this list. Like, we'll meet next week. And I'm like, no break here. Don't we get a break? Like, I've done a lot of work. And she said, just bring me your list next week. So I'd go to the Newington meeting, and I had this list made up. And most of them stayed on the list. She put little check marks next to some of the old relationships, and saying that if they've moved on and they're not in your life right now, then you can allow them to not, don't darken their door, I heard the term. Like, if they're in another relationship and they're not a part of your life, leave them alone, basically. But, she had a but. She said, but you're also doing this with God. So there wasn't a specific rule on it. She said, if it feels right and you feel you need to, and she said, for the first ones, please run them by me before you go out and do them, because a lot of people just head on out, and I'm sorry, or when you did this, I did this, you know. So. You have to get out all of the you part. It's just about my part. And there are cases where, you know, I felt like I was harmed more, but we were two sickies. You know, my ex-husband that I had, you know, one date with and married. My daughter was graduating from college, and he flew out from California. And my sponsor said, now you're not going to go to your daughter's very special occasion and make an amends, right? And I'm like, okay. That means I got to fly to L.A. Anyways, I said, okay. I was planning on doing it. You know, the truth. I was. But he comes and to the graduation, and we're all sitting around, and it's after the graduation, it's the party after the graduation, and I go in to use the bathroom way in the back of the house, that's not the bathroom in the front, and I come out, and there he is, and it's just the two of us. I'm like, God, really? Like, should I be doing this? And I definitely had my side of the street to clean up. I felt, and I was really hoping that that it was the right thing to do. And do you have a few minutes? And I've done this work. And, you know, I just made amends for the negativity that I gave to my children. That I still feel bad about. I was so angry at him that my daughters got that negativity. Even though I wasn't saying I hate him or anything, it was coming out sideways, and it was there, and it's damaging. And so, but I also did it in front of him, so he was aware of it. Because I, too, was told, don't make amends for things that they don't even know happened and you hurt them worse. That actually happened to me. Someone made an amends that I didn't know that, anyways, don't do that. Don't do that, it doesn't feel good. that slipped out. I'm sorry, I don't know if I'm tired or what, but I can't remember the whole men's, but it really was sincere from my heart. And I said, I wish I did better through the divorce and through all these years. I just wish I had done better, and you didn't deserve the negativity. And from now on, you know, I will not be talking negative about you. That's important. And I did that. I held that, and he came back and said, he said, are you kidding me? He said, our daughters, I'm here at this graduation because of you, because of the way you raise these children. I never had gotten a compliment from him ever. And he was very sincere that the reason the children are doing so well, because he did leave them a lot, he hurt them a lot, and that was my anger towards him. You know, hurt me, but don't hurt these kids, I'm a bear. And I saw him for the next graduation a couple years later, and it was very, very different. It was very cordial, very nice. How are you? And I never once ever said anything bad. So that was something until he passed a few years ago. I held that part of the agreement. I asked him if I left anything out. And that's when he said, no. Thank you so much for the way you raised the children. So the first amends I made was to my mother, who I had all those resentments towards. And she was by this time in AA. So she passed at 93 with 45 years of sobriety. And I can't believe some of my resentments. Like, I resented that people saved her a front row seat at the Saturday morning meeting in Wells. And that she would eat a chocolate donut and get chocolate all over her lip and not wipe it. And all this stuff, oh my God, it was so petty. But there were big ones too, but these petty ones. And so I set up a time. I said, Mom, I'd like to make amends. And she's in AA, she knows all about it. And you don't have to do that. You don't have to do that. You just keep doing what you're doing. And I said, well, I'd like to have a conversation as I could, if I could. And I knew she was a little uncomfortable around it, but what happened to me in some of the turnarounds is I began remembering, all of a sudden, the hate started going away, and the things that she did well started coming in. Like, my mother did a lot of things well, and frankly, I'm a lot like her. So if I hate her, I hate myself. So we're two woman alcoholics who were powerless over alcohol. And so I made amends in telling her all the things that I loved about her. And I said, and I stole from your purse when I went out drinking. And I do owe you, I'm sure, $500, and she wouldn't take it, and I bought her things. But I said, did I leave anything out? And she said, yes. Yes. She said, remember that time you were hitchhiking with Kelly to Hampton Beach, and I drove by and caught you? Yes. And I saw her coming, and we both jumped behind the gravestones, like, and she's like, oh, I know you're in there, get in this car, and drove us home, and blah, blah, blah. And I said, yeah, I remember that. Like, in my resentment part, she wrecked my weekend, but she saved my life. We were little kids, we were 14, you know? So anyways, so she says, well, Jane, ever since that night, every time you left the house, I worried. I was 14. So my whole teenager, I would leave, and my mother, and she always stayed up. She always stayed up. She'd listen for the door to close. And so that one, I did tell her, I'm so sorry. And I hope to just make your life feel safe and stable from now on. But I felt so bad. Like, and that's the one I live with. You know, like, that's what alcoholism did to me. And this isn't all about, like, you all feel great, because you usually feel much better from making right a wrong. It's just common sense you feel better. But this one really got me, because it was the truth, and I knew it was the truth. And so she ended up, I said, well, maybe we could go to a meeting together. And she said, yeah, the Wells meeting, the one where she sat up front and they saved her seat. And I said, I'd love to. And so for the next few years, every Saturday morning, I would pick up my mom, and we would go to that meeting. And I thought it was so cute when she had chocolate all over. And we just, and on those trips, I would say, Mom, I never asked my mother about herself. Never. Like, it was all about me. And I'm like, what was it like? Your dad was 16 when he died? And she's like, yeah, he was 16. How awful. And she told me all these stories that I never knew, because I didn't care. That's a selfishness. I didn't care. And all of a sudden, I was so interested. Who is my mother? What happened to her in her life? So back then, they didn't have Social Security or anything. Her father dropped dead. They had zero. And her mother had to be sewing for welfare. And my mother was valedictorian and couldn't go to college. All this stuff. Like, I was like, wow, I'm learning about my mother. And I loved learning about it. Isn't that awful how the disease, the selfishness of this disease, just cuts us off from our, the people we care about the most. We think they're awful and hate them. And oh my God, she turns. So I took care of her until she passed. I was there every minute. And she had dementia and wasn't always easy. And I was right there. And I was right there from my father. And those are the amends that were most important, because my mother wouldn't die until I said, I'll be taking care of Dad, and then she died. And I really believed that. She was already gone, and she just wouldn't take that last breath until I said, I'm taking care of Dad, and she just passed. So the amends to them have, I'm like, I'm just a little girl, God. Like, I'm not cut out for this. And I just prayed a lot. And many people, I know many of you have gone through the same thing, and you know what it's like, that there's ups and downs, and I was impatient, and I'd have to make amends. Mostly to my dad. I was making amends to him all the time. Like, I got to really change here because I'm tired of making amends. And so that boss, Bill, the boss, your Bill, my Bill. So he's the one that my mother kept saying, that awful Bill. And I'm like, no, it's not him, it's me. And so I made an appointment with him, and I said, can we start over? We came to work on the same day, and I said, I have really made your job difficult. And I said, I've gone through this process, I'm in AA. I had already told him that, but I said, I went through this recovery process, and I want to make it right that I was withholding information you needed. I wasn't taking you. I wasn't allowing you to be my boss. I remember saying, I can't remember all these verbatim, but I cannot tell you the change that happened in that relationship. And I wasn't there a real long time, but I went in, and he said, how about once a week you come in and I'll tell you what I would like with your program. And I'd like to hear what you think of that, and we'll work together. And I said, I'd love to. So once a week we had this standing thing, and I got to know him. He got to know me. I was like, I did things I didn't want to do because they were his ideas, and turns out they were good. They were really good. And so I'm growing, learning how to be a worker among workers and let a boss be a boss. And when it came time that I was moving to Massachusetts with my honey, I went in and gave him a good size notice, and I said, would you write a recommendation? And my new boss down in Boston said, I hired you because of your recommendation from the director of the program. And I'm like, really? What did he say? She said, glowing. He named everything. It's just incredible, isn't it? Like, I got that job. because of his referral and recommendation. And they had like an hour phone call. Because they don't know me from Adam. I'm from Maine, and I'm trying to get this job down in Boston. And I got it. And so I was making all these things right with the people around me. I made amends to my two daughters. I wish so bad I had listened more and asked them what they thought and welcome their ideas. And I was such a stressed mom most of their life that I was making decisions and come on, hurry up, and this is what we're going to do. And they're very active kids, and they. But I wish so much that I was more present, and that's exactly what I told them. What I just said, I was stressed. I was. It wasn't fair to you. It was like you were absent. I was absent from. but I was sober, and I was showing that as an example. And you know, they're like, yeah, that's okay, because they're teenagers. Yeah. They were in college. And actually, one was really not happy at all with me. And every time I'd call in our early relationship, I'd hold the phone out here, and she'd be, ma. And I'm like, okay, we're done. Bye. And so we had no relationship. And the other one was going to college, and she just never came home. Like, I really drove them away of being right down their throat, you know, just overpowering. So I would drive to Plymouth State, and I'd call first, and I'd say, can I visit, to the daughter that wasn't seeing me. And she's like, you're coming to Plymouth? And I said, yeah. And she said, okay, I have like 10 minutes. She's angry at me. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'll take it. And my sponsor said, you better develop a relationship with her before you just smack down an amends. And so I drove up, and it was quite a ride, and I drove up to Plymouth State, and I'm like, hi. And I didn't hug her, and I brought her out to lunch, and I did that every Saturday. And it was like half hour, and she's like, okay, I'm going back to the dorm or whatever, and I'm like, okay. And I drove back, and I'm like, I don't know what this is doing, but the next week I said, all right, I was thinking of coming over, can I? Yes. And so I drove up to the school, and she said, I have a boyfriend. I knew nothing about her. It was so awful how we were so separated. And I said, I'd love to meet him. Come up next week, you can meet him. You bet your ass, I drove up that next weekend. She's a sweetheart, and she had a really hard life. And I didn't make it real easy, and I don't take full responsibility for everything. But I felt I couldn't wait to meet the boyfriend. Mm-hmm. And so I drive up, and they're both there, and happy to see me. She's so happy I'm meeting him. And then the following weekend, she came home. And I had her favorite meal. And I'm not like a doormat. I'm a woman of dignity and truth. And I'm interested in her. That's my role. I'm interested in you. You have value. And so I gave her time and attention. It's a big gift. Time and attention. So, she moved 10 minutes away from me down the Cape. She lives in Boston and works in Boston, But she and her boyfriend got a little place, a beautiful place, down in 10 minutes away from us. And she said, yeah, well, when you get old, you need someone. You need someone around. This is the girl who wouldn't talk to me, who would hang up on me. And she bought a house right there. You never know what's going to happen. And not all of them. You know, sometimes you could be kicked out of the office. Happened. The principal of my daughter's school, my daughter came home and said that a teacher threw books at her. And I marched down to that school and I said, I need a witness here. So I made a big to-do to confront the principal, and he has to be fired, this teacher. Come to find out, she was cheating, and he went over and he took books and he threw them on the floor. So her story was not totally honest. And so now I'm a little sheepish, because the teacher came in and told me what happened. And I had no idea what to do with that. My daughter wouldn't do that or whatever. Like, not helpful at all when my daughter does something wrong, to learn from that. That's a way to learn in life. Like, we all have to do now. And so no learning. I'm like, I still don't like that guy. And so I get to the amends, and he's like this great coach and everything. He should be fired. Get to the amends, and I got to go make amends to these guys. You know, that was wrong in front of the whole office. So the principal was like, wanted the secretary to come in, and I'm just a little shit. But I go in and I just asked for an appointment and I made my amends. And he's like, yeah, fine. He could. He did not welcome that. He was just so, like, maybe it took him a while. I'm not sure. But, you know, that's not my business. I did the right thing and I made my amends. And I did it the best I could. And what happens with that happens. And I left and I made amends to the teacher. And he's like, you know, these kids, if they had moms that could be honest like this, like, he was all about, he turns out to be this really great guy. And so anyways, these amends, you never know. Like my sister, who I really, you know, sometimes just because you're blood, you're not best friends. And we grew up in an alcoholic home, so there's stuff. There's stuff, and we all react to it differently. And she wasn't my favorite. And so, but I had to make amends to her. And I asked her, did I leave anything out, hon? And I felt so much compassion for her. She was the baby of the family. And they were really, I tried to help her as much as I could. And she started crying. She said, you were my mom. I didn't know that. I said, I sucked as your mom. Really sucked. Because I was always impatient. And she always wanted to tag around. And I said, is there anything I can do to make it right? And she said, let's just be in each other's life more. You know, that's what she wanted. And so I stay in touch. I make sure that I, and she never does. That's not necessary that she does. It used to be that way. She doesn't get in touch with me. She never does. Like, but I do all the time. So not all the time, but reasonable, like being in touch. So these amends have been freeing. That's the word you used. And I can go anywhere. I've run into people that that I thought I'd never ever find, You know that. Everybody's shaking their head. You think you'll never see them again. And you're hoping, right? You'll never see them again. And then you go to this little store in the country, and they're coming out, and you're going in, and you're like, Bobby? Oh, do you have 5 minutes? God's in charge. God is in charge, and I'm just so grateful. I'm grateful to have a way. I didn't know how to clean anything up. I didn't know how to make things right. I did a lot of what he did. I moved, and nobody ever heard from me again. But I try to keep those connections and be the kind of person that God needs me to be. And that's it.